When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. Miller and Condon continues. 106.3 KXNO. A different baseball song. I don't know if we played this one coming out with our man Matt Snyder over our last years of baseball conversation. Kenny Roger, the greatest. What's up, Matt Snyder? How you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
Pretty good. Outside of the Minnesota Twins and other series loss, and we will get to them momentarily, but we got to kick it off here in this market with your team, the Chicago Cubs, and a bullpen that had concerns coming into the year. Alzolay, we saw it a year ago. He was okay in the role as a closer. It has not gone very well up to this point in the season. What, three blown saves already? The bullpen as a whole was a concern. They went out and got Neris, and that was it. And with a good bullpen, we'd be talking about a team that is working towards the top of the NL. Certainly not the case right now. Your thoughts on the Cubs?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like 13-9 is good. And in fact, if you calculated it out, they're playing at a 96 win pace. So that's perfectly acceptable. They're playing well. They're winning series even over the weekend. Like split with the Marlins, that sucks on the surface because you take, okay, you should win three or four or even sweep all four, but a split's not horrible. And that's coming off a road trip where they won back-to-back series in Seattle and Arizona, which is no easy feat. But it's when you look at Alzolay has blown four saves, and they're not just, oh, it's a blown save and the other team ties the game and then you win an extra. No, they lost all four of those games. All four of those blown saves were home runs, too. And it's okay. So you can't say he should be 7 out of 7 in saves right now. Obviously, you would love that, but it's probably not realistic. But even if you say he would be, if he were 5 of 7 instead of 3 of 7 right now, you're 15-7 in one of the best teams in baseball. If he just had only blown two saves instead of four. Some of the issues do trickle down from the rotation injuries as well. It's not just Alzolay. Like the bullpen as a whole, you go back to that losing the 8-0 lead against the Padres, or that back and forth game in Arizona that they ended up losing even after Ian Happ hit that grand slam, which was amazing. The bullpen was just worn down in tatters. If Steele and Tyone were both healthy from the start of the year, Assad's probably in the bullpen, and all of a sudden now you haven't had to work a lot of the late inning guys as hard as you've had to work them, and it just trickles down from there. So some of it is the injuries, but I do think that Jed Hoyer just did not address the bullpen enough, and it's come back to bite them so far, and hopefully it doesn't come back to bite them long term. He's going to have to make some trades in front of the trade deadline, but man, that's a long way away to wait until July.
Sadly, yesterday, Kyle Hendricks lowered his ERA by giving up four runs in four innings pitched as his ERA drops now down to 12. We know that Justin Steele seems like he's close to getting back, maybe a couple weeks away still. Are we talking about, though, the final opportunities for Kyle Hendricks in being part of this rotation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it seems like they're giving him a ton of rope. It's why two starts ago I did seen a bunch of people saying, like, oh, this has to be his last start. I was like, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, yesterday on this text chain with my dad and brother, this has to be it, right? And I'm like, no, it's not. I guarantee you he gets at least one more start, at least till Steele gets back. And he threw out a live batting practice off the mound yesterday, but he still has to go on a rehab stint. I think he's going to be in the rotation at least until Steele gets back. Then we'll see what they do. But it seems to me once Steele's back, Steele, Tyone, you've got to leave Assad in there. You probably have to leave Ben Brown in there, right? I mean, they used him in relief, but I feel like he's earned it. Either Brown or Wicks, and then obviously Imanaga would stay, but for me, there's 6 or 7 guys that should be in front of Hendricks in line once everybody's healthy.
And you got Nico Horner that's red hot. Bellinger's starting to heat up here. I mean, the offense is there. you know, when you talk about those bit pieces, going out and getting some bullpen arms, you know, a sixth, seventh, eighth inning guy, even, you know, something like that. Bullpens are just so up and down. We see this year after year, and the teams that invest, a lot of times it just doesn't work out. What kind of pieces, how many pieces are you be looking at? If we are still having this conversation a month from now at the end of May, what can be done that early before the deadline?
Not a ton. Yeah. You would have to hope that there are, let's say these teams continue on this path. Then you can try to mine the White Sox, the Rockies, and the Marlins, because they'll already be out of it. You could probably hit the White Sox and Rockies up now, but the problem is the reason those teams are so bad is because they don't have any good players to begin with. In terms of outside the organization help, other than teams that are historically bad, you kind of have to wait. So it's going to have to come from within the organization, and you're just going to have to keep trying different arms. And there is middling depth. That is, in terms of back-end arms, it's going to have to be somebody like Leiter or why can't I think of his name you mentioned earlier? Neris. It's going to have to be Leiter or Neris in the ninth. Maybe Keegan Thompson's going to be the guy that he looked like he could be a few years ago. But you're going to have to dip down to the minors and just keep trying, guys, and just hoping that some kind of formula falls into place. The good news is I do think the right guy is at the helm for that, and that Council showed in all his years with Milwaukee, he could be an absolute maestro with that bullpen. So I think that it's just going to be trial and error for a while until Council kind of settles into who he wants into every role, and hopefully that works itself out then.
It's early in the season, but the Cardinals sit at 9-13. They're swept away by the Brewers. Some of the defensive metrics, and people said this might be the best defensive team in the NL, are not looking great, including Nolan Arenado, a multi-time Gold Glove winner. The Cardinals, how concerned should Cardinal fans be right now?
A decent amount. I mean, I usually, if they won the division last year and they were 9-13 right now, I'd say don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But given how bad they were last year, and given not only the defense, but the offense looks terrible right now. And it's when you look at Goldschmidt being 36 years old, well, if he was still 30, yeah, he can get off to a slow start and bounce back. But he's 36. He might be full-on decline right now. And he's a major piece there. When you're talking about Arenado and Goldschmidt being the veterans who can kind of prop up the team while youngsters like Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman go through growing pains on the fly offensively, it just looks like there's something missing with this group on offense. So, yeah, I'd be worried about that. And the rotation was a huge issue last year, and it looked like it might be an issue coming into this year. Well, Sonny Gray looks great. Lance Lynn's been good so far. Matz hasn't been bad so far, but Gibson and Mikolas are bad. I don't know how much longer this is going to keep up with Lynn and Matz. I trust Gray, but that's about it. You kind of feel like the rotation's a house of cards right now behind Gray. So I am not bullish on the Cardinals' prospects for the season, I'll say that.
Gorman hitting 169, Walker 164, and there's Goldschmidt at 179. One extra base hit all season long, his only home run of the season, an OPS of 507. If you don't know what OPS means, that's bad. That's really bad. That's not even like utility middle infielder.
That's what his slugging should be.
Right. Yes.
Without even adding in on base.
Oh, scary spot right now for the Cards. Let's jump over to the other division, the other Central in the American League, and here are the Guardians. Now, I know the schedule has not been overly daunting, but this is a historic run out of them. They sweep the A's, do what you're supposed to. 16-6. I wasn't buying the Guardians coming into the season. They lose Bieber, and yet they just keep finding pitching and finding ways.
Yeah, I'm still not really in on them maintaining this level of pace or being one of the better teams in baseball. I'm just not. I don't think offensively they're as good as they've been playing. Kwan is good, but not this good. Naylor is good, but not this good. Now Jose Ramirez will get better, and that will mitigate some of that. But I don't think that they're going to continue to pile up runs at this rate. They lead baseball in runs scored. I mean, come on. They have a better offense than the Braves and the Yankees and the Rangers and the Dodgers. Get out of here with that. But I don't know how good the Royals actually are, because they've done a lot of beating up on the White Sox out of their 13 wins. I don't know how good the Tigers actually are, and the Twins are 7-13. Obviously, the White Sox are brutal. the Guardians, if they win something like 88 to 90 wins, it's going to be enough to win this division, and they're already 10 games over 500. So I don't think that, like I said, I don't think they're going to continue to play like this, but they've put themselves in a great position. Now, the issue is going to be in the rotation because Bieber's out for the season. McKenzie right now has more walks than strikeouts, and his velocity is way down, so it looks like there might be a problem with them. It gets thinner after Tanner Bibee behind them, so I just don't know how well the rotation's going to hold up. They've got a stretch here with the Red Sox at home, at Atlanta, at Houston. We'll see how they emerge from these next nine games.
Well, we asked a question about the Cardinals. Let's ask the same for my Minnesota Twins. They can't hit. They can't pitch. That's not a good combination.
No, it's not. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at your play. Yeah, I mean, 195 average, 281 on base, 329 slugging, absolutely brutal. And, like, Royce Lewis, I think, was going to be a big part of the offense, and he got hurt on opening day, a major injury. Correa looked like he was bouncing back, and now he's hurt. Byron Buxton's been awful, absolutely terrible at the plate. 25 strikeouts against one walk?
No.
Are you kidding me? He's better than that, but the rest of the offense, you kind of look at it and like, well, is Christian Vasquez really better than this? Is Carlos Santana at this point in his career really better than this? I don't know about the personnel. Like, they're going to need Correa back soon. Kepler, I know he's on his rehab assignment when I was in Indy Friday, so he's probably back soon. Those guys are going to have to rake when they come back. And then, yeah, pitching, there's a few guys who you feel like they could be better than this, but it's not overly extreme. With Pablo Lopez, it's still a 3.97 ERA. It's not like it's 7.97. So I don't know, man. I had the Twins winning the division coming into the season, but I'm not that confident that they can get things going right now. They've really kind of looked as bad as they can look for 20 games.
It's silly to leave a team for dead after a week, but that's what I did with the Mets. That 0-5 start. And here they are. They've won now series against the Reds, the Braves, the Royals, the Pirates, and the Dodgers over the weekend. It didn't go well yesterday, but still a series win. You do that in a row, and those Pirates and Reds and Royals ones that you mentioned, those are pretty good teams, at least average teams this year. Should we be a believer in this Mets team?
I'm still not. I'd say let's just straight up to win a series in Cincinnati, win a series in Atlanta, beat the Royals 2 out of 3 after they'd won 7 in a row, sweep the Pirates after they started the season 9-2, and then go into Dodger Stadium and win 2 of 3. It's an incredible run right now, and it's not based, as you said, like the Phillies last week when they swept the Rockies and the White Sox. You can dismiss that as competition. You can't do that with the Mets. They've been facing teams that are either really good or were playing really well when the Mets played them, and they're just totally beating up on them. I still think that if we're going to make fun of ourselves for overreacting to them starting 0-5, then we have to hold ourselves to the same standard when they've won, 12 of their last 16. Mm-hmm. We need to not go crazy about that either. And we need to say they're in the middle of that. They're not as bad as they were when they were 0-5. They're not as good as they are right now when they've been 12-4 in their last 16. They're somewhere in the middle of that. I don't love the way the rotation looks right now. And offensively, they have been just absolutely feasting in runners in scoring position and runners in scoring position with two outs. And I don't think it's that sustainable because I don't think it's a predictive stat. I don't think because through, 20-ish games, a team has been really good or really bad with runners in scoring position, I don't think that means that's going to be the case the rest of the season. So I think that that's going to come down and that's going to hurt them.
Matt Snyder joining us from CBS Sports, talking baseball as we do each and every Monday here on Miller and Condon on KXNO. Well, throughout the week, John Sterling hung it up. Very quick exit from the booth, but so many great calls. And, Matt, us here in the Midwest, he's still a guy. Didn't hear him a ton on the radio, but the calls, they will live on, the songs, everything that went along with it. I'm going to miss John Sterling, and I know I'm not alone.
Yeah, I always thought when I would hear the highlights that, I'm not even going to do it like that Yankees win thing, but I always thought that was kind of obnoxious. But don't it, like, the Yankees and their fans be obnoxious.
Yes.
It just goes hand in hand with that.
Yeah.
And I saw some people saying, like, what's your favorite home run call? I know because of A-Rod and the stigma around him, everybody's going to hate on it. But really, an A-bomb from A-Rod is, like, the perfect home run call, is it not? Like, I always thought that was just absolutely perfect, especially the way that he would say it when it was a big home run or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, he's a fixture for the most iconic franchise in Major League history for a long time. So that's a big, big deal. And it's hard to dislike him. Like I said, even if that Yankees win call could get obnoxious at times, come on, the Yankees, you should be obnoxious.
It's the way it's done. Absolutely. Well, of course, your power ranking column is up, as it is each and every Monday, over at CBSSports.com. What else got cooking over there at CBS?
I interviewed Paul Skeens on Friday at AAA Indianapolis, and we've got that up on the site right now. It was especially humbling when I was standing one step above him and he was still way bigger than me.
Yeah, he's a big dude, isn't he?
6'6". Man. 6'6", 250, every bit of that, and it didn't look like an ounce of fat on him. Big, big dude. Really nice guy, by the way, I might point out, and I don't always say that. And also, I've been working on something where I've been interviewing a list of orthopedic surgeons on what we can do about all the arm injuries and if the pitch clock is at all related. So that will be coming up within the next 2 weeks. It's still taking me a while to do all the interviews and transcribe and put it together.
Makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, kind of give us an early preview before the column is out about that. I had that on my list. It's just so difficult with the power that these guys throw at now and the velocity and the pitch mix and the pitch clock, everything involved here. It feels like there's something there, right?
There's a consensus on the arm just can't take this kind of pressure over and over and over again. One doctor said, like, the fastest things that ever happen in your body, number one is a sneeze, and number two is your arm action on a pitch when you throw it over 95 miles per hour. And so picture sneezing as hard as you can 120 times in one day. That probably would hurt a little bit.
Yes.
But there is not a consensus, by the way, on the pitch clock. One guy I asked, could the pitch clock cause more injuries? And he started laughing as if it was ridiculous. Another guy said it's not the main reason, but it's possible that it could contribute some. But then I said, well, what about, isn't guys maxing out on every single pitch a bigger deal? And he said, oh, of course, that's way worse.
And that's where we are, trying to figure it out on the fly. And they're not going to hit pause on the season for a couple weeks to figure this thing out, right? They're going to keep playing games each and every day. And they got to figure out exactly what is the best course of action going forward. Matt Snyder, CBS Sports. Matt, as always, enjoy the conversation. We'll talk again next week.
All right, man. Take care.
Matt Snyder joining us. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Matt Snyder CBS, is where you can find him. Great baseball talk from Matt Snyder and all the columns up on CBSSports.com. As we continue here on Miller and Condon, we talked earlier about the Hawkeyes and their spring game. Now it is the Cyclones' turn. We talk with Alec Bussey, a breakdown of what he saw at Jack Trice Stadium over the weekend, and look forward to the Iowa State football team. Plus a little basketball recruiting news. We'll do that as we continue. This is Miller and Condon, 106.3 KXNO. 12:35 on a Monday. Miller and Condon back with you. Trent Condon here on 106.3 KXNO. With you till 1 o'clock, and Murph and Andy will take over the radio airwaves. Let's go next to Alec Bussey. He was in Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday, saw the final spring practice for the Iowa State football program, and he joins us here today. Alec, as always, appreciate you joining us on a Monday. How are you, and are your lips chapped? You got some windburn? What was happening after your day in Jack Trice?
I was fortunate enough to be up in the press box.
Okay.
I was warm for the most of it, except for like the last 5 minutes when they brought us down, and I was pretty cold at that point. The weather was horrible. It was really windy. It was really cloudy. The only thing that made it better was that it wasn't raining or snowing. So,
positivity. I like that, Alec. That's a good thing. Well, let's talk about some of the positives and some of your takeaways of what you saw out there on the field. I mentioned this a little bit earlier today in the first hour. Dylan Lee, he was kind of, I guess, the star of the offense, if you will.
Yeah, he definitely got a lot of the opportunity on Saturday just with, you know, so many running backs being held out, whether because of injury or just not receiving opportunity during the scrimmage portion of practice. Dylan Lee ended up getting, I think, 17 carries for about 85 yards on Saturday, including the touchdown from like 17 yards out. So he had a pretty good day. I actually thought he had another impressive run where he broke a tackle in the backfield that Miles Purchase was trying to make, and he was able to break out to the sideline for another solid gain. So he had a really good day for Iowa State out of the backfield. It will be interesting to see what his role is for the Cyclones of the fall, because obviously, you know, if Usama returns, I think they expect to have Jalen Jackson healthy. He was in a boot on his left foot on Saturday. Carson Hansen was also held out because of an injury. He wasn't dressed. And then, you know, probably a pretty overlooked name in that room is Arlen Harris, who transferred to Iowa State, I believe, from Stanford prior to last season. He also didn't participate on Saturday. So it'll be interesting to see how he kind of factors into that room. But I think he's one of the main players who really shined on Saturday.
You know, Alec, as you're on the beat going into your second year now, I'm sure you have learned talking to other media members, just talking to the fans, that kicking, it's not normally like it was a season ago, and there seems to always be a little bit of angst as it pertains to place kicking with Iowa State football. What did you see from the young guy, the walk-on Kyle Kinnardy, what he was able to do out there, a couple of 40-yarders, and sounds like looked pretty good in a windy day?
Yeah, I would say he was pretty impressive. He had a good day. I've obviously heard a lot of good things about him this spring and just kind of the specialist group overall. Matt Campbell spoke really positively of him. He's not on scholarship right now, but Campbell did indicate that they'd like to get him on scholarship if things continue to trend in the way that they are. It sounds like that could happen for him. Of course, you know, having a good kicking game is something that's really valuable. If you think back to that 2022 season, some special teams issues and some place kicking issues kind of prevented Iowa State from going to a bowl game. Not to place it on one individual player or one individual aspect of the season, but that's certainly something that stands out from the 2022 season where they just kind of fell short. It kind of hurt them in their quest for a postseason bid. So, yeah, I certainly think that Kinnardy had a pretty good day on Saturday, especially when you consider the difficult conditions.
We talked a little bit on the back end and some of the defensive guys. We know so many of these players, so many guys coming back for another season at minimum of eligibility, and many of them with multiple years. But you brought up Kinnard Snyder, who came in from Louisiana Monroe. He had a good Saturday, it sounded like, as well. And then just Sean James and that defensive backfield. It feels like they got about 50 different safeties that are vying for playing time back there. But what can you tell us about DeSean James?
Yeah, they're really high on him. Matt Campbell talks all the time about how well he played against Oklahoma State, had a big play in that win over the Cowboys early in the season, which kind of got things trending in the right way for Iowa State in 2023 after losing to Ohio the week before. But you know, you kind of consider the impact that he could make. It's kind of hard to project it just with how many players they have returning at safety. Obviously, Bill Frehler, Jeremiah Cooper, Malik Verdon, all those guys return. They're high on what that safety room can be, but I think at corner there's a little bit more question. Just three or four guys on the roster at corner right now. A couple of them obviously have played a good amount of snaps. When you think about Miles Purchase, Darian Porter has played before, and so has Jontez Williams. But Williams and Porter more in limited roles than Purchase, who started for the last couple of seasons.
All right, as we kind of dig a little bit deeper into things, we didn't get to see the starting quarterback, Rocco Beck. What did you see out of J.J. Cole, though, and your thoughts of him sticking around for another season, knowing he's going to be the backup this year? What you saw from Cole?
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty good on Saturday, at least compared to what we saw from him in the season a year ago. I remember the three games he kind of stepped into last year, Northern Iowa, Oklahoma, and then at the end of the season against BYU. He showed some steady improvement. That first game against Northern Iowa, you could tell the game was really fast. You could tell he wasn't getting through his reads at a super effective rate, and he kind of, you know, led to him tucking it and running. I thought you saw a lot of the same things at the end of the Oklahoma game when he checked into that opportunity at the end with the game out of reach. But I thought against BYU, he looked better. I thought on Saturday, he looked better too, just because, you know, I think he's just getting more comfortable in a college offense and understanding the speed of the game and understanding the importance of, you know, not locking on to one target. He definitely had one throw in the end zone that I would say think into double or triple coverage. So that's something that they'll want to avoid and truly kind of work out of his game just in case Rocco Beck does get hurt and isn't able to go or play every snap for Iowa State this season at quarterback for whatever reason. But I think that they feel good about the growth that he's made, and I think he showed a good amount of it on Saturday.
You over at CycloneAlert.com have a couple of names that Iowa State football is looking at in the portal. A lot of looks, I'm sure, at Jacob Bostic, former Hawkeye receiver. That's a part of it there. But tell us about a few of the other guys and maybe potential just position groups that they're really looking to target here over the next 8 days.
Yeah, in the football portal, I would say that defensive back, specifically corner, is a spot that I think you could see Iowa State really look at. Like I said, just, you know, really three guys on the roster that have played college snaps at that position before, with Purchase, Jontez Williams, and then Darian Porter. And then behind those three, you have Quentin Taylor, an early enrollee, true freshman. They'll add a few more corners after this semester, I guess you could kind of say, when members of the 2024 class get on campus. That will include David Coffey. He's a prospect from the Chicago area. But again, you know, I think you want some experience potentially added at corner. They've offered a corner from Youngstown State, Joy Yukebeck, I believe is how you say his last name. Starts with a J. Mm-hmm. Those are always tough for me.
Trent. Is it a soft J or a hard J?
Yeah, it's tough. Okay, I'll admit. I don't know how it's pronounced. But yeah, I think that corner is the spot. And I think the offer to Jacob Bostic is certainly notable because they don't need help at receiver entering 2024. But I think they do feel like they might need help in the future. They're going to lose, you know, Higgins and Knoll after the season. Daniel Jackson will depart after the season. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Alston can come back. He has 2 years, but, you know, he's not super proven yet, at least at a Big 12 level. Benny Nagoye played well, I would say, on Saturday and had a pretty good spring, it sounds like. But I think just adding another body or receiver for the future, the long-term future, is kind of the mindset that Iowa State has right now.
Alec, before we run out of time, let's jump into a little bit of basketball with you and get your thoughts on going and tapping into St. Mary's for a big recruit coming up this weekend. Potential, what's going to happen there? And if they don't get the big guy from St. Mary's, kind of what's next?
Yeah, I think they feel pretty well positioned in their pursuits of Josh Jefferson, transfer from St. Mary's, like you said, averaged about 10 points a game, close to 6.5 rebounds. I believe his season was cut short because of a knee injury in early February, but he's someone who I think fits great for Iowa State on the roster right now for this upcoming season. He, you know, fits a lot of their needs at the four, but if they aren't able to get him, and like I said, I think they're positioned well for a potential commitment sometime this week. I wouldn't be surprised if the announcement comes sometime this week. I think you could see Iowa State re-engage in their pursuit of South Dakota State transfer William Kyle. I know that's a name that a lot of Iowa State fans have been really intrigued in adding, but I just don't think that the staff has prioritized him as much as they have Jefferson. And when you consider that they've rescheduled a visit for William Kyle and they worked really hard to get Jefferson on campus this past weekend, I think it tells you all you need to know about where their priority has been placed at adding that four man in the portal.
Have you heard anything from any of your colleagues at 24/7 about Omaha Ballou? It's been incredibly quiet, which is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I haven't heard a ton. I'll be completely honest. It's not somebody that I've been asking a ton of people about just because he's not going to return to Iowa State.
Right.
I know that I saw he was linked to K-State. I've talked to a few people over there. They were kind of surprised by that inclusion of K-State being on that list of schools. So I don't know where he's kind of looking. Obviously, you know, his freshman season did not go very well. Didn't get much of an opportunity to play, but I don't really think he was ready to play at Iowa State either. It was pretty raw, and in his opportunities that he did get outside of that game in the Big 12 tournament, he wasn't super successful. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I wouldn't, you know, if I was advising him, which I'm certainly not, I don't think dropping down to a good mid-major conference is the worst thing for him, where, you know, you see so many guys now, unless you're like a, you know, bona fide stud coming out of high school, top 20 recruit that's guaranteed an opportunity early in your career, it's really easy to get recruited over. And I kind of think that's what happened with Omaha at Iowa State after his freshman season. I know he was a five-star kid, but I don't think he necessarily came in ready to contribute right away just from a skill perspective. But I think you see so many guys nowadays get recruited over, and if you go down a level and you tear it up, then you become a prioritized transfer the next offseason, or if in two offseasons from now, if he plays really well, maybe he can go to the NBA. Who knows? But I think his whole situation is kind of tough, and I also think it's worth noting that a lot of guys in the portal seem to be moving slower this year than they have in the past. Mm-hmm. That being said, you're starting to see, you know, more and more guys commit, I think.
Great insight. Hey, appreciate it as always. Alec Bussey joining us from CycloneAlert.com. Alec, we'll talk again next week. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it.
Alec Bussey joining us here. Find him on Twitter at Alec_Bussey. Great information on the Cyclones. Final timeout. We'll come back, put a cap on things. My picks of the day. Didn't have a lot of picks over the weekend. We jump back in. We got hockey. We got basketball. We got baseball. And we got you covered when we come back. It's Miller and Condon on KXNO. All right, welcome back in. Final moments of the program here, and it is time for my picks of the day. We have a variety of sports available. I like this. So we're going to dip our toe into playoff hockey for the first time. We got some NBA picks and a little baseball for you. All right, let's kick things off with the baseball side of things. I got two dogs barking for you tonight. Let's go first to Milwaukee against a Pirates team that is suddenly struggling. Joe Ross will get the ball for them. Give me the Brew Crew playing good baseball, fresh off their sweep against the Cardinals, plus the 128 with Milwaukee. And also give me the same hot team, coming off a loss. Give me the Mets tonight as they go to San Francisco. Jose Quintana will take the ball for them against win for the Giants. Really like the way this Mets team is playing, and we'll grab them plus the 102. Two hockey, one play there. Yes, I'm playing hockey tonight. Going to play the puck line. Give me Edmonton, -1.5. They have covered the puck line the last two times against the Kings. This one at home. And how about the price? Plus 160 for the Oilers right now at Circa Sports. And then we wrap it up with the NBA. I'm taking the Lakers in the points. It's a zigzag theory. I will jump in with the Lakers, at least keeping it snug against the Nuggets. I'm going to lay it with the Knicks tonight with the uncertainty of Joel Embiid. Give me New York -5.5. And finally, here's a different one. The Magic in the first half, plus the 3 at Cleveland. Bounce back factor for that young Orlando team, plus the 3. Brewers, Magic, Knicks, Mets, Oilers, and Lakers. The picks for today here and our Circa plays of the day. Back with you tomorrow for our mock draft. We'll be out at Graphite Construction Group and your chance to call in. Murph and Andy coming your way next.